I have a story to share with you. It's a story about some unsung heroes and some of the most unlikely soldiers. In February of 1945, the Allied forces in northern Italy were stalled. In fact, they had been at a stalemate for 6 long months, stuck in the mountains between Florence and Bologna. The German army had a seemingly impenetrable fortress on the storied Gothic line, for the Nazis controlled a strategic stronghold known as Riva Ridge. And because of its location, high on the top of a mountain, Mount Belvedere, it appeared that unless you had an army of mountain goats, there was no possible way to reach it. But the Allies had a force and a strategy much greater than mountain goats. They had a highly skilled group of men who had a passion and a love for their mission. The 10th Mountain Division of the United States Army. At the beginning of the Second World War, the United States had no mountain soldiers. But there was a man who was an amateur skier. He just loved the mountains, and he loved to snow ski, and this was back when snow skiing was a rare novelty in this country. He approached the government about establishing a military mountain and ski division. Charles Minnie Dole was a veteran of the First World War. In 1937, he founded the National Ski Patrol, which exists to this very day to aid injured skiers. He had read about specialized forces in Finland, troops who had been trained to fight in mountainous terrain. Inspired by that, he wrote a letter to President Roosevelt, and that led to a meeting with General George Marshall. He received approval, and he set about recruiting a ragtag group of the most unlikely soldiers. There were wealthy ski bums. There were thrill seekers, mountaineers, loners, expatriates, men who didn't seem cut out in any way for military service, the least likely soldiers. But they had a common bond. They had a common love. They had a common passion, and that was their passion for skiing and a love for the mountains. The men started what would eventually become 3 long, exhausting years of grueling, intensive training in the Colorado mountains. They learned how to use skis and climbing skills to fight in winter conditions and mountainous terrain. This ragtag group of unlikely soldiers was slowly and painfully developing into an elite group of the world's finest Alpine militia. Now, attrition was very high, but when the few and the finest finally emerged, they were called into action in February of 1945 to overtake the German stronghold on Riva Ridge. There they planned and executed what is still regarded to this day as the most daring series of nighttime mountain attacks in United States military history. They went to the top of Mount Belvedere and took the sheer, treacherous face of Riva Ridge to smash the linchpin of the German lines. It is an amazing and an epic story that most people have never heard anything about. It was chronicled in a book titled The Last Ridge by McKay Jenkins. It's one of the most captivating stories of the Second World War, the story of how young men were asked to do the impossible, but because of their passion, because of their commitment, because of their courage, because of their love for the mountains, they succeeded. They attained the unattainable. They did the impossible. They climbed to the top of the highest mountain. Our moderator, Rod Penry, has shared with us the sobering reality of where our church is financially. This is not good news. You are not the bearer of good tidings, my friend, but we needed to hear that. We need to know where we are, and it's not where any of us want to be. But let me expand just a moment on what you said. Our financial situation is not our most pressing concern. Hear me clearly. Our financial situation is not our most critical concern. Our financial situation is symptomatic of a greater issue that was articulated by the prophet Isaiah in the 40th chapter of the book that bears his name centuries ago. In this passage that Paul read for us, Paul, I'm impressed you read it from the King James Version, and you read it well. The prophet simply asked the question, why? What's the use? In our Bible study this week, and I think I've enjoyed the Bible study this fall. We've been talking about the messianic prophecies from Isaiah. And this week we talked about the 40th chapter. And we've learned a lot. I've learned more than anyone. One thing I learned is that if you look at the book of Isaiah, between the end of the 39th chapter and the beginning of the 40th chapter, there is a time period of over 150 years. 150 years of silence. God didn't speak. And some terrible things were happening to God's people. The best king that ever had, King Hezekiah, died. His son Manasseh became the king. He was evil. He ruled for 56 years. And his reign was a disaster. He desecrated the temple, he worshiped idols, he even assassinated the prophet Isaiah, the prophet of Jerusalem. He undid all the good things his father had done. Now there ended up being one more good king, Josiah, but he was killed in a battle at Megiddo. And then the kingdom of Judah just went into a downward spiral, going down and down and down until 586 BC, when the Babylonians did what the Assyrians could never do, and that was they conquered Jerusalem, they destroyed the city, they burned, and they razed the temple of God, and the people who were left were taken captive, and they were deported to Babylon. Through all of this, God remained silent. And then finally, after more than 150 years, there is a voice. One lone voice. A voice crying in the wilderness, comfort ye. Paul, you're going to be really impressed with me, because you know how much I know about music. But we've been tying this Bible study into Handel's Messiah. And here I am giving lectures on music, you know, technical stuff. But there's one thing, I heard that laugh. There's one thing, which I'm laughing too. There's one thing that I learned that I never realized before. You know when the Messiah begins? And you know, you have the dramatic overture to begin with, and then there's one beautiful tenor voice, just one voice But you notice when that voice begins, the music stops. There's silence. Because what Handel did was he not only communicated the words of Scripture to us in a beautiful way, but he interpreted those words through his music. And that silence represents the silence of God. It represents 150 years of disaster. God had not spoken. And the word is, comfort ye. And then there is a powerful affirmation. Comfort the people because God is coming to your rescue. God is going to build a super highway through the wilderness. Every valley is going to be lifted up. Every mountain is going to be made low. All the rough places are going to be made plain. And the glory of the Lord, and the glory of the Lord is going to be revealed for all flesh to see together. Climb up to the mountaintop and proclaim the good news. And you know what the prophet said? Why? Why do you want me to do this? What good will it do? Because all of the people are grass. Now, I can get up here and tell you all the good news, but you're not going to listen to me. Because people are people. People are sinful. People are unfaithful. People are like the grass. They're here one day and they're gone forever. What we see at the beginning of this reading is what a lot of us feel. Why should I even bother? When people tell us the church is not relevant anymore, when people find more entertaining venues that seem to fill their spiritual needs without a whole lot of commitment, when people let you down, when they just don't show up, or when somebody says something they shouldn't say and they hurt you, when there's a misunderstanding, when our budget keeps going down and down, and we know the local economy is not improving, then why should we bother? I think the biggest issue that we face in our church is simply this. We have lost our passion. We have lost our commitment. We are not focused on our purpose. We have not sacrificed for the one thing that we claim to be the most important thing in our life. So what is your passion? What has God called you to do? Back in 1940, if you had asked the men who would eventually be a part of that 10th Mountain Division, if they were willing to give and to sacrifice, if they were willing to be committed, to have courage, if they were willing to even think about the ultimate sacrifice, they would have laughed in your face. But what Minnie Dole did was profound. He didn't challenge those men to sacrifice. He didn't tell them to give all that they had, to be 100% committed, to go above and beyond the call. He called them to find their passion, their love, to use their God-given gift, their love for the mountains, their passion for skiing, the very thing that brought them fulfillment and joy. He called them to use that passion for the greater good. So what is your passion? What is your love? What is it that God is calling you to do? You know, there are a lot of things we do because we're supposed to do them. There are a lot of things we do because it's the right thing to do. There are a lot of things we do because our mama told us, and her voice is still in the back of our head, that you need to be doing this. But then there are things that we do simply because we love doing them. There are things that we accomplish that we measure in dollars and cents, and there are things that we accomplish that we measure in fulfillment. So what is your passion? Is the impossible possible? You know what God said to the prophet when he said, what's the use? He didn't even listen to him. He just said, get up on top of that mountain. Get up on top of that high mountain and proclaim the good news. Lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up and fear not and proclaim, here is your God. So this is what I want to challenge you with today. Are you using your passion and your love, the one thing that God has called you to do in the service of His church? See, I'm convinced that God calls us to be a part of this church and that God has called every single one of us individually to do something that we love. He's gifted us. That is our passion. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And if everyone would find their individual passion, something that you're willing to go above and beyond, something that you're willing to sacrifice for, something that brings you fulfillment and joy, we're going to find a church that is alive, a church that is powerful, a church that is relevant. Now, there's so many, you say, well, goodness gracious, you're probably talking about some real big thing. No, I'm not talking about big things necessarily. Tommy and I have been looking at some of the things in our church. We really need somebody to step up to the plate to share that passion. Everything, like when the wonderful children come down on Sunday, who do you think stays back there with them? We need some more volunteers for extended session. We need volunteers on Wednesday night. We need, I know the leaders of Touching Davidson County with Love would tell us, we need some more people who share that passion, the passion that you had a few years ago to make a difference in this community. Last Sunday when we were lighting the candles in the darkness, Jim Underwood's family was here. Do you know what his passion was, what his love was? He looked after the vehicles in our church. We never had to worry about the bus. We never had to worry about the van. He made sure it was up to date. It was inspected. The oil was changed. It was gassed up. Since Jim Underwood has left, we haven't had anyone to do that. We need someone to work with our RAs on Wednesday night. In just a couple of weeks, we're going to be sharing the Christmas angels with you. We need somebody who has a love and a commitment and a passion for that ministry to just be the one who's going to be behind it, to organize it, to inspire us, to motivate us to do what we have done before and beyond. Now, that's one thing. We're supposed to find your personal passion and use it. But the second thing is simply this. We are supposed to proclaim good news. We're not supposed to get up on top of that mountain and just enjoy the view. We're supposed to be a herald of good tidings. Now, I want you to look around this morning. We have a good congregation, but I bet there are more empty seats than seats that have someone in them. When was the last time you opened your voice, opened your mouth, and proclaimed the good news and invited someone to come and to be a part of this church family? Not because you should be in church, but because it is here that you can find fulfillment. It is here that you can serve the Lord. It is here that you can find that passion. We need to be proclaimers of good news. Back in the old days, we called that evangelism. And we need to be evangelists. You know why? Because there's so many people. There's so many people that you know and I know who are out there and they're down in the bottom of the valley. It may be a financial situation. It may be depression. It may be an illness that they're going through. It may be a family crisis. But they're down in the valley. Do you know what the good news is? The valleys will be lifted up. And there are a whole lot of other people who have a mountain to climb. They don't know how they're going to do it. It's impossible. They don't see any way that they can get to the top of that mountain. The good news is the mountains will be made low. And there are people going through rough times in life, but guess what? The good news is all of the rough places will be made plain. That's the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what we're supposed to be about. If we reclaim our passion and our love to what God has called us to do, and if we proclaim the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, then Rod, you're not going to have to get up here and talk to us anymore, because everything else is going to fall in place. We're going to reclaim that commitment and that love and that joy that we have lost. So what about it? That's the challenge. The challenge to climb to the top of the mountain. We have good news to share. Are you willing to come on with me and open your mouths and your voices and proclaim the wonderful news, the voice that cries in the wilderness as we prepare the way of the Lord?